Okay.
This is a face someone's born ready.
Cool, because I'm recording now. Hello and welcome. We are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. My name is Patrick Schmaltz, with my two brothers, Christopher Schmaltz. Hello, Christopher.
Good evening.
And my other brother, Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
We are brothers. We are geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 178. We're continuing our House of the Dragon hot takes. Hot takes double D tonight because we're talking about two hot takes about hot D. Hot takes, hot D.
We're kind of tepid because we're recording this a couple days after.
D hot takes.
I guess we should, if we're really doing hot takes, we should record them like the night they come out or something.
Yes. Steaming hot. But
we had 2 days. These are tepid takes. Hot, tepid takes.
Your hot D tepid takes. Are always tepid.
Thanks. Always. Thanks, Christopher. Yeah. Okay. Spoilers going forward for episode 4. It's called The King of the Narrow Sea. And episode 5... We Light the Way, is that what that episode is called?
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right.
So, spoilers for those two episodes if you haven't watched House of the Dragon 4 and 5. We're talking about both of those this episode to get caught up. We're getting caught up because we skipped a week because we were busy. We were all busy. Okay, so let's start off with 4. For two episodes to do at once, there's a good story arc that goes through both of these episodes.
Yeah. I was thinking about that earlier today, too. This is very much like Rhaenyra needs to stop fucking around, and this is like her betrothal and wedding arc.
Yes.
These last two episodes.
Yes, like they are an arc into themselves. And it's interesting that they did that, maybe intentional, unintentional, because this is the last two episodes of that actor. There's two actors that are being replaced, I believe, and then they're adding a bunch more kids who are the young babies who are growing up into Aegon's going to be older and all of her kids are going to be part of the cast. And so anyways.
Yeah, no, well, Millie Alcock and Emma D'Arcy are gone. They're done. This is the last episodes that will appear them, because there's going to be a 10-year time jump, and the parts of Alicent and Rhaenyra, our two protagonists, are going to be taken over by new actors, but also the Valerians, the twins, Laena and Laenor, will be taken over by new actors as well, because they'll have aged up 10 years. And there will be actors who will be playing the relatively grown versions of their children. You're right, because Alicent has already had two kids, Aegon the Second. We're gonna see him when he's like 13, because there's a time jump. So yeah, this is, and I for one am. I mean, I'm excited to see where the show goes from here, but I cannot. I've run out of superlatives when it comes to talking about Millie Alcock and Emma D'Arcy and how they played Rhaenyra and Alicent respectively. I mean, putting this kind of show on the shoulders of two relatively young, unknown actors and having both of them just crush their respective roles so far has been,
crush. I think you're giving them a little more credit than they're due. I think they did fine.
You don't think that the acting has been as good as anything we've seen on a Game of Thrones series?
Fine. It's been fine. I think the guy that plays Viserys?
The king?
Yes. I think he's Patty been great.
Yeah,
like,
he's great.
He's amazing. But like I think the rest of them have been fine. I'm only saying that because like there hasn't been a moment of like, holy shit, that's a good moment for these characters. Like, I think the story has been overshadowing their acting by, I just don't think that they've had a lot of room to like act.
Dude, I couldn't disagree more, dude. I mean, especially in this, in episode 4, King of the Narrow Sea. I mean, we're going to jump around a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to jump around a little bit. Yeah, that's fine.
Rhaenyra and her whole kind of sequence where she's in Fleabottom with Daemon, that whole sequence and how they pulled that off.
Pretty interesting for sure. Like, it's come a long way in Game of Thrones, where I feel like when we watch Game of Thrones, like, proper, you feared for characters' lives at all times, because, like, random things like that, I was just immediately like, dude, she's gonna get, like, fucking stabbed, or raped by some random that doesn't know who she is. Like, I just immediately went to, like, oh shit, like you're leaving. Yeah, the worst place possible is where this show has, like, taught me to be.
Yeah.
I'm glad, for the most part, they came out unscathed, aside from the obvious, like, there's some kind of bullshit about women being pure, and, like, what her going into a brothel is scandalous, and what were you doing with your brother?
Uncle.
Yeah. And it just sort of, like, there's definitely, like, the Targaryens are able to, like, interbreed a little bit, and we saw that a little bit with, like, Jaime Lannister and Cersei, but, like, the Targaryens just, like, fuck their siblings, you know, and they don't really intermingle.
This is the central kind of moral question of the entire political landscape, is that, and Christopher has encountered this because he's been reading Fire and Blood. There's been wars that have been fought between the Faith of the Seven, which outlaws incest, and the Targaryens, and the fact that they keep the traditions of old Valyria, which allows incest as a way to keep Dragonrider blood pure. There were years of bloodshed between the Faith Militant and, I mean, Maegor the Cruel. He fought wars against that because they said to him that it was immoral, that they wanted to, you know, remove him from the throne. I mean, for many, many reasons. Aegon was married to both his sisters, but Maegor made war on the Faith because they tried to, you know, there was opposing moral realities. So the Targaryens do what they do, and they're the most powerful family in the Seven Kingdoms, and there's this kind of detente between the Faith and the Targaryens, because we abhor incest for many reasons, but their moral code is very different, and
let's start to, like, go through the episode a little bit, and then we can talk about stuff as we will. So the episode 4 comes back with, like, she's interviewing suitors. She doesn't like what she sees. They get into fights because there's guys who are too old or too young. There's nobody.
She's on her suitor tour.
Tour, right?
Yeah.
And she's on an island, which I looked it up, but, like,
she cuts it short.
Yeah, she cuts it short because she doesn't like what she's seeing. And then...
she doesn't like parading around like a piece of meat, which is what she's... the king is having her do.
Well, and in her mind, I think, no one is worthy of her. And I think, in a lot of ways, the only person that she considers worthy is her uncle.
Mm.
I think Daemon is... really the only person that she would really consider.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's married and all that, but she doesn't want to marry. She doesn't want to be tied down. She doesn't want to lose her freedom that way. And the only person you would even consider is Daemon.
Oh, well, and then she's got an answer to a husband is sort of like the, yeah.
She's sorry. Being, yeah. I mean, you watch her evolution because she's kind of being immature and a little petulant. And then there's this transition after she gets back in defiance of her father. And then she decides when her uncle comes back and he's the winner of the battle and the king of the, you know, that's the title of the episode, right? Right.
So yeah. So we start to see the uncle come back. He bows the knee to his brother. He wants to be back in court. He wants to be in good graces. Now, in like Game of Thrones, in pure like Game of Thrones, it's like what he's definitely got ulterior motives, you know.
I think it's a calculation. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not doing this. He's not bending the knee and giving up what he had as freedom just because he's coming back for reasons. Not all those reasons are clear, but.
It's so funny to me because I actually think Daemon is a very simple character. When it comes to his brother, he's very simple. He just wants his brother's attention.
Right.
He loves his brother. He wants to be part of his brother's life. He has motivations and impulses that cause problems for his brother. And he wants, but he's the better warrior. He has a more solidified kind of military might. If he wanted to usurp his brother and just kill him and take the throne, he could do it and figure out a way to try to maintain power. Mm. But he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He actually loves his brother. He wants to support his brother. But at the same time, he wants certain things. Which makes his brother's life complicated, but I think Daemon's actually a very simple kind of creature,
right?
When it comes to his brother, at least.
Well, in his family, I think that could be extended to he loves his family, he loves his brother, he loves his niece, and he wants to be accepted and part of the circle. He just doesn't like that he's sort of this isolated person that. Is like never gonna have power. He sort of like has all this power but doesn't know what to do with it. And I think that he's definitely struggling with some stuff because he comes back to this moment and then he leaves clothes for Rhaenyra and she sneaks out of the castle. They sneak out of the castle to, and like, is this just like a normal day in the streets, or was this like a festival that was happening? Because there was like a show, and there's like people drinking, and there's people like eating on the like serving food.
For all we know, that's Daemon like enticing all that stuff to happen. Like he could have manipulated all that stuff because we bought him when he's in town.
Yeah,
the party really gets going because he spends money. He goes
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and then I was just gonna say in like episode one or two, early season, we see him drinking with the gold cloaks and the brothels, and that's where he like insults the death of the dying queen. And so like he's got a relationship with the people in the streets. You know, it's like he feels safe there.
Well, and you've gotten to the kind of the crux of the episode where, you know, Rhaenyra and Daemon go to a brothel.
Yes.
Daemon takes her there to seduce her. They do not consummate because he continues to have issues getting aroused. He has impotence issues.
Yes, yes. Like I there's two things that I have a question about. Does he have impotence issues, or did he not like that he lost the power there? Well, he was in control, and then she was like, "I want you."
He was unable to perform because he didn't have total control. Right. I mean, we saw he's had issues performing before with Mysteria in episode one.
Right.
I thought that, I mean, and this is three men discussing this scene. Yes. Where there's a lot of different power dynamics surrounding sex. I thought it was as well done as it could have been because it wasn't titillating.
Super awkward, though. God, it made me feel awkward. Did it make you feel uncomfortable? God.
Christopher, what were your feelings on kind of that whole interaction in the brothel?
I didn't make me feel uncomfortable. It made me feel like this is well done in terms of
really well done.
The way that it was filmed and the way that they really focused on the shift in power dynamic, and that's the important thing. They did and the director of that episode talked about this in the after show, that the thing you're supposed to glean from that is a change in mindset for her. And that is probably the most, I subscribe to the theory that that's why he had his issues, because he felt that shift. And it was like, okay, I am the man who's in charge. You're going to do what I demand of you. And it was like, nope, we're going to do this a different way. We're going to do what I want to do. And he's like, oh, wow. Okay. And that's a very clear window into why he is so weak and simple. Like, I agree with that, Andrew.
I agree with that, too. 100%.
Simple person.
Yeah.
And he has impulse issues and that kind of thing. And so that's the most important takeaway. It's not the prurient stuff. That's not it at all. And that's why it shows when it's directed by a woman that it's all about the focus on, all right, what is the transition happening inside her?
Mm-hmm.
Not about the act itself and the display.
Yeah.
And so then, and she reinforces that by going back to the castle and getting with Sir Criston. Criston?
Yeah.
Sir Criston Cole.
Cole, yeah. And she is in charge.
She's in charge, yeah.
And so she understands, and you know, obviously it's supposed to be a larger metaphor for she's in charge.
She's going to be in charge of the kingdom, so she could do what she wants with anything. Total freedom.
She doesn't have total freedom. She doesn't. And she realizes that in the next episode.
Right.
You see her understand that I'm not going to be petulant. I can't be petulant anymore. Mm-hmm. This shit has to happen. There are reasons, compelling reasons why it has to happen. All right. But then she finds some power for herself in talking to her assigned suitor, and they work out the transactional nature of the thing. It's so interesting that it dawns on her, this is how I have power. I don't have power anymore except in these areas, and I'm going to exercise it where and when I can. And she does. She realizes that her life is largely out of her control, but she can assert some control where she can, and she does.
Follow me through this series of events real quick, and let's just talk about steps. So Damon takes her to the streets. They almost have sex. They don't. They go back home. She has sex with Criston Cole instead, right?
Yeah.
And then... Otto finds out about her going to this brothel with Damon, and then he brings it to the king, like, she might have been sullied by this. I'm bringing this to your attention. King doesn't like hearing this. Allison hears about this. Skip ahead to the king questioning the Damon about it, and then the king questioning her about it. Allison questioning her about it.
Don't skip over the key fact of the king questioning Damon and Damon offering to wed her.
Yes.
To save her reputation, which would essentially, he'd be the king consort.
Right. He's admitting to.
This is a manipulated series of events.
Yes. He doesn't. They didn't have sex, but like they basically got close to it, close enough.
Well, if he'd been able to perform, they would have had sex. The reason they didn't is because he couldn't perform.
So that's Aemon interesting. So
doesn't pull off.
The series of events is still happening, though. The king lets the hand, or Rhaenyra convinces the king that the hand of the king is lying to her. So get rid of him. He's a manipulation.
Yeah, it's a manipulation. So Rhaenyra reads Otto from the jump.
Yes, and then Otto gets let go. The hand of the king gets let go by the king. He's like. You can start to see that, like, Viserys is, like, kind of easily manipulated. He just wants things to be happy, and he, like, goes, he go, like, if somebody tells him something, he just goes in that direction, and he, like, sort of just, okay, I'm gonna go with this, and that's it. And he doesn't, like, push too far, you know, deeper. And so Otto's gone. The beginning of episode 5, Otto is leaving. Alicent is hung out to dry. Did I skip anything? Alicent and Rhaenyra have like a conversation out by the Godswood about, like, did she actually do it? She says that they didn't, but she doesn't tell her about Kristen Cole and her having sex. So she's had sex. But, like, and there's all this, like, double standard bullshit. Like, we're just, you know, we're not talking about the moral bullshit about, like, the men are able to do this, all this crap. Like, but as soon as she wants to do it, it's a problem. Right. But, right. Yeah. So they have a little conflict.
Completely feeds into the ongoing theme of this is a misogynistic, patriarchal society.
Yes.
And it's the way that Westerosi culture enforces these bullshit constrictions on the women in society, when literally Daemon is revered and he is the most morally, like, abhorrent of anyone in the kingdoms.
And he's war hero. Like he said, he's simple. Like, he's not like a deep thinker or complicated. Well,
I want to highlight something very specific. The conversation that kind of changes the tenor for Rhaenyra and how she looks at her future with Viserys, where, you know, they're in the small council chamber and they're arguing about why, what happened and what needs to happen going forward. And Viserys says to her, it's like, I don't want to, you're my heir. That's not going to change, regardless of who you're married to or not. You should marry because it's good for your power base. It's a good political move.
You got to get married.
You need to grow up and cement your power. We're going to marry you off to Laenor because when you have the Valyrians in your corner.
The key point is she has to have children.
Yes.
To
continue the dynasty.
Well, that totally, because also, like, I mean, you got to make alliances, right? You got to marry an alliance, a powerful alliance, hopefully. And like, as a royal, you have a duty to the kingdom that is a little beyond yourself. And I think that actually what you talked about, Christopher, is like the son of Valyrian is like a good choice because they're both able to have what they want. They don't really, he's not going to like fall in love with her and want power or like.
It's the best political choice, and it ends up being the best personal choice for Rhaenyra also.
So the series of events is still like happening. So
Let's go back to the point that Andrew was making, which is you can see the light bulb turn on for her in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because she has been all petulant because he got married.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A boy.
And so immediately she knows that she's on thin ice, or thinks.
Yes.
Thin ice. And not once has he said to her, I am not going to change. Right?
Right.
She has observed all of these people lobbying him to change his heir, or that the heir will change, blah, blah, blah. So when he says to her directly, you are my heir, I'm not going to do that. And then he talks about, you have the power of choice with regard to this. You see her realize that, okay, so that's not going to happen. I still have agency here. I am not completely out of control, because she's reacting to the fact that nothing is within her control. I go back to that a lot. Yeah. And so she realizes that, okay, I have control in this, some control in this, because he's not going to change the decision. So he says, she trusts that. So that's why she then stops being the way she was and changes her approach.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then he says to her, he's like, you want choose your match, but you have to marry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like mm-hmm. you like I'm not I mean we're not at this point choose your match. You have to get married, but through this series of events, he's like, enough screwing around. Mm-hmm. You're going to marry Laenor Velaryon. It's time. That'll resolve a lot of these ongoing issues. And
well, we're sort of dipping into five a little bit, so I want to
we got to get to the key fact of this episode of what Alicent puts the pieces together.
Right.
Is the Maester brews tea for Rhaenyra so that if she is pregnant, the baby won't survive. So
right, she knows that she had sex. She knows that they
But she puts that together later. But that's the key fact at the end of this episode is the Maester brews this tea. She's like, okay, any kind of baby that gets produced will just cause way too many issues right now. So she's gonna drink this tea to make sure there isn't a kid that comes from any kind of liaison that may or may not have happened with Daemon.
The Wormtongue Strong. Wormtongue Strong is in there sort of being all like suggesting.
He's the beginning of episode five. He starts to like Otto leaves and then they're like hanging out in the garden and they're starting to talk about he suspects
okay, I was worried about her.
Yes. Definitely like a manipulator. Definitely like, you know, think about this. I heard them talking about this tea that the Maester delivered. I hope she's okay. You know, and then Alison puts it together, but she's not too smart to see the manipulation yet. And then she questions.
I think she's getting there. And then
she's getting there. She's getting there.
The dumbest person in the whole episode is Kristen Cole.
Hold on. I have something to say about that scene. So he's not dumb. I think that
Dumber than shit.
Hold on. He is not dumb. I think that this man is a true knight, and he feels bad about breaking his oath. And as soon as he's questioned about it, as soon as he's questioned even the slightest bit about it, he folds. He cannot tell a lie, and he's an honorable man who just can't lie. Right.
I think you're completely right about that. I think that he has clung so hard to being a member of the Kingsguard.
Yes.
That defines him so much. He said it. He broke his oath coupled with her. And he loves her and begs her to, like, run away.
Does he love her?
I think he loves her. He's heartbroken.
Is he in love with her? Or is he just, like, mad at himself that he broke his oath? And the only way to fix it is to... legitimize it by saying we get married.
That's a conversation from somebody. He doesn't realize he's trying to. He's not thinking through what he's asking of her.
Yes,
he really. And so he's coming from a place of I love you. Let's run off.
Yeah, and I think like, he absolutely loves her, and then he's heartbroken.
She
rejects him, and he's heartbroken. So he has all conflicting things.
Right.
He's dishonored himself. He's broken his vow. He's heartbroken.
For nothing.
Yeah, for one night of pleasure.
The littlest bit of pressure from Alicent, and he caves, but it's still dumb. He's got all these legitimate emotional things that are going on, but it's still dumb, in my opinion.
So he caves. Alicent knows what's going on, and her episode, her arc takes a weird thing towards the end there. But the king begs Velaryon to marry their houses. It's sort of like bringing them back together.
What'd you say, Christopher? I didn't quite hear you.
Sorry, it was just I love that scene where he sails across to drag him out. That whole power dynamic. Showing up, not greeting him at the shore, making him come into the throne room. All of that shit was like signal setting. It's like you're a weak, pathetic king.
Well, and then we talked about this two episodes, like our last episode, but when we were talking about episode three, they didn't really show a lot of like the king being injured. And I had a question in my head of like, is he still like dying? And in four he's and five, he's sick. Fucked up. Like
he is
like
falling apart.
Yeah, his fingers are gone. The fingers that we were talking about, there was like, did he lose them? What happened? They're gone. Like there, he has sores crawling up his shit. In episode five, he has like some nasty shit on his arm. He's throwing up.
His flesh is rotting off. Yeah,
it's bad. No one is saying it in the show, but like this isn't grayscale, right? Like grayscale sort of looks different, right?
No,
it's not grayscale.
Right. So he's got some bad shit that is like definitely killing him. And you start to see that a lot. You see that a little bit in episode four and then a lot in episode five. He's very weak. He's very weak
in every way. Physically, politically.
Yes,
He's weakest he's ever been.
He's definitely like dying. And he's getting his house in order because like he's gotta put her in a good place. Marrying someone good,
he sees it coming. So
yeah. He has that conversation about legacy, like how will I be remembered? He has
that was one of the best scenes in this whole episode. Really, I will say this: these past two episodes have been really good, really like subtle, really like nuancey character stuff, dealing with some complicated problems with houses and marriage and like breaking oaths and like intrigue and like really good like
the palace intrigue stuff over the last two episodes has been fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah, really good.
And the actors are doing a great job because relatively simple script. Mm-hmm. Relatively simple script, and they're filling in so much in those scenes with solid acting.
Yeah.
In the things that they've been given to say, I've been impressed with both of the episodes in terms of a lot of subtlety and style in the acting to communicate a lot about what's going on. So I like both episodes a lot.
I think that the more we talk about it, I think that like I'm not necessarily like bad mouthing Millie Alcott or those guys. I just think that the acting all around has been good. Like I think that those two haven't necessarily stood out to me because like the caliber of acting has been incredible. Like and so that scene where I love to think about this and it's a question of when you're a ruler and you've lived like a peaceful rule, like, and you've tried to keep the peace as much as you can, like you're not remembered for anything great. They remember the conquerors. They remember the Magor the Cool, the blah, 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 the conqueror, the, you know, it's like they remember those guys because they like destroyed castles and murdered people and they have songs sung about them. But he's been a peaceful king that loves hunts and festivals and like keeping the peace and just keeping everybody calm. But that's not very fun, is it? Like people don't remember you for history
not in this society.
Yeah. Game of Thrones society is pretty cutthroat. Like everybody's.
Well, and it's Jaehaerys, the king before Viserys, I mean, he ruled for like 60 years, 70 years. And he was a good king because he didn't fight any major wars and he united the kingdom. He made it one continent. Like he built roads. He contributed to the power of the Night's Watch. Well, he threw his wife. He made some good laws. You know, he did things that actually like made society better. After Aegon conquered the continent and after Maegar just kind of fucked shit up again because of how belligerent and cruel he was, and how anyone who challenged him just got murdered, essentially. But yeah, you're right. Viserys is looking at the end. He's looking at, you know, the end of his life, essentially. He knows how sick he is. He knows that he's going to die, or he can feel it coming. And he's like, what will I be remembered for? And yeah. I don't think he likes what he's looking back on his life. He probably doesn't like it that much. He looks at the tragedy of losing his wife. I'm sure all of his children, but Rhaenyra, have died.
Five miscarriages, right? It's sort of like,
yeah, no, it's, you know, he's a bit of a tragic character. He has this enormous responsibility he didn't ever want, and he's not really suited to, and it's essentially killing him. I mean, he hasn't sat on the Iron Throne in a while, but the Iron Throne, every time he sat on it, it injured him. You know, it cut his back, right. Cut his fingers. The wounds never really healed, all that shit. Yeah, Viserys, he's a pitiable character because he's tried to do his best, but he's just not suited for the role he's in. He's just not. Yeah.
So in true Game of Thrones history is like there's a wedding. It's got to be bloodshed, right? It's
shit like, goes sideways.
Shit
at a wedding.
Goes sideways. You know, it's not even the wedding. It's like the wedding like prep feast. It's like the beginning, like everybody come to town. Let's party for 7 days.
It's the welcome feast.
Welcome feast.
It's a rehearsal dinner.
Rehearsal dinner. Yeah. So.
Oh, shit. And we're going to have a rehearsal dinner. Nobody's allowed to die.
Nobody's allowed to get beaten to death by a knight at the rehearsal dinner.
Weapons at the rehearsal dinner in Tucson?
No weapons at the rehearsal dinner.
Oh,
not
man.
Mine anyway.
Oh, man. I was just going to... I was definitely
going
to bring
gonna
my...
Bring his sword.
I was definitely going to bring my Blackfyre replica. Like,
nice. Dude, I want a Blackfyre replica sword.
I know, so you've been tweeting about it nonstop.
Dude. Dude, it's such a cool sword design.
I know, you don't have to yell at me. I know what you're saying. I'm not tweeting about
it. Make it, Andrew. It will be at a con.
It will be at a con. Just give it a year. Just give it a year. It'll get made. Both of those swords will get made. It'll be Blackfyre, it'll be Sweet Sister, Dark Sister.
Dark Sister.
Yeah. Those two will definitely get made.
Yeah, I can see both of those up on your wall, Andrew.
Totally.
Yeah, there's space for one right here.
Yeah.
I just want Blackfyre. I don't need Dark Sister. That
so
doesn't
there's,
speak to me.
There's well, some co- there's some complicated things saying, happening this wedding. So there's a complicated what did you say, Chris? Sorry.
I was gonna say your fiance gets Dark Sister.
Oh.
Christopher says that I should be able to hang Blackfyre and you should get Dark Sister as replica swords. Well, you can put yours in your dragon lair, and I'll put mine right here.
You guys have a dragon lair in your house?
Ashton's office.
Ashton's office is the dragon lair?
Office is called the dragon lair now. Cool. I'm gonna get a sign.
It's fine. We've derailed.
We have so derailed.
What is the name of the dragon where they store all the dragons in the...
The dragon pit.
The dragon pit. It should be the dragon pit, not the dragon lair.
It's not as fun.
Okay. All right.
We like Dragon's Lair better.
I mean,
office,
sure.
Dragon's Lair. She's saying it's not a pit.
I mean, it could be. I would. Anyways,
You're wrong.
There's a lot that happens at this wedding. Let me just walk through this for a second, and you guys comment what you will. Jason Lannister shows up, says some sexist shit. She eye rolls at him. There's a bunch of other houses there. The Valyrians show up. They sit next to him. And Rhea Royce was killed by Daemon at the beginning of this episode. Like smashed her head with a fucking rock. And that comes to head a little bit. Like, what's his name? Royce comes to question Daemon about that. He's pissed that he's just there. What else? Like, one of the other Valyrian girls, the Valyrian daughter is...
Hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you go further, key point to make.
Yeah.
Daemon shows up at this feast. He's not invited.
Yeah.
They have to set him a place. They don't expect
they
him
there. They
throw him
a table at the high table. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, a chair at the high,
he's
a
still,
new
he's
chair.
Still banished. He's just showing up doing what he wants.
Yeah.
He wants to be around, and he just shows up. Because what are they going to do? Throw him out?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Targaryen. He's the prince.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of weird intrigue there. One of the Valerion daughters gets hit on by Daemon for a second, and then Daemon and Rhaenyra talk for a second, and then
we can't really hear you. You got to lean forward. What'd you say?
On the dance floor.
On the dance floor. And then the Valerian daughter the Valerian son, his gay lover, figures out that Kristen Cole is
in love with Rhaenyra's lover.
Yes. And so he like talks about that with him and then says, "Hey, you keep my secret, I'll keep your secret," sort of thing. And he doesn't really like this, so he beats the dude to death.
In the middle of the wedding, the middle of this feast, beats him to death.
Yeah, he's like approaching like uncomfortable stalker territory a little bit.
Totally. He goes off the deep end.
Yeah,
he's sort of losing his entire sense of sense of self has collapsed, and he just has to lash out.
Yeah, yeah, and unfortunately, that guy, I don't remember that guy's name.
Joffrey Lonmouth, I think his name is. Joffrey is his first name, and Lonmouth, I think it's his. Yeah.
Wow.
Joffreys do not do well at weddings in Westeros.
Sounds right. And then, so he beats a dude to death, and there's some kerfuffle. The king says nothing, and like the hand of the king has to get his like big son to go rescue the princess
Arwen Strong. He is my new favorite character. He's everybody's favorite character. He will be a key player going forward.
Because we still have five episodes left. I mean, we're talking...
You'll know exactly why he is key going forward.
Yeah.
But he's just straight up... He loves Rhaenyra. He wants to protect her. And his dad, being the hand of the king, puts him in a perfect position to be her champion. Yeah. And Harwin Strong, he will be a very important player going forward.
Cool. No, well, spoilers. Yeah. Spoilers.
And the sad ending to all of this is, so Laenor Valerian, his lover, gets beaten to death. There's a kerfuffle at the wedding. Viserys is getting ever sicker. And instead of having this huge... You know, after 7 days of tournaments and feasts and celebration, they're going to have this royal wedding in the Red Keep.
They just have it right there.
They just have it in the middle of the night in the Iron Throne Room, because we can't, you know, they're not going to screw it around anymore. Let's just do it. The pomp and circumstance is totally like forgotten about it's like we've already had a murder here. Let's just get this over with.
Yeah.
Kind of. And it's sad. I mean, Laenor Valerian is standing there crying because his lover was just killed in front of him. And now he's getting married in the same place where his lover was killed.
There's literally blood on the ground. And there's a little thing about like rats in this show of just like rats. Like
eating the blood.
Eating the blood. And
they don't even clean up the pool of blood.
Yeah.
The rat is like getting there and starts to eat the blood. They haven't cleaned it up yet.
Go get some sawdust, guys. It'll be all right. Just like throw some sawdust on it. It'll mop right up.
The final scene, though, couple things. Yeah. The final scene is that Cole is out. He's going to disembowel himself.
Yeah.
He's going to straight up do samurai's murder.
Seppuku.
And the queen stops him.
Yeah. Yep. Alicent stops him.
Yep.
That will have huge implications going forward as well.
So we're going to jump ahead 10 years the next episode. I saw the trailer for the next one, and we're going to see some older kids. We're going to see Finn Wolfhard in a blonde wig.
Not him, but yeah.
It's not him, it looks just like him. Like, how can you unsee it?
Aegon the Second.
Yes, yes.
And he's like 13 or something.
Two solid episodes. All the stuff in the in the rehearsal dinner was super interesting. The queen flexing her muscles by coming in late, interrupting the speech, wearing green.
Yes.
The importance of that color for what the signals are. All of that is Game of Thrones at its best.
Yeah, it's turned up to 11, and I love it. I can't believe. I'm amazed thinking about it more and more how good this series is already, and we're only halfway through season one.
I mean, we're at the midpoint basically, and we have five more episodes. So,
well, kudos to them for figuring out that the show can be compelling by not making dragons the MacGuffin. Hmm. I mean, the show, people who put together the show really got it, that the dragons are projections of power. That's it. And it's humans being human with that as the backdrop. And so they have done a great job of figuring that out and communicating that in a way that we're always reminded that, you know, some of these people, the power dynamics are very skewed.
Right.
But humans will human, right? And try to get away with as much as they possibly can, knowing that they could be incinerated at any moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reality of this thing that I started to think about is, like, you don't want to fuck with the Targaryens because unless you kill all of them, your whole family's dead. Like, you're incinerated. Like, there's no coming out of it alive. But you can manipulate them. You can manipulate them, and you can get power close to them, and like try to get just a little bit of, like, you could kill people around them and manipulate people around them, but you can't kill them. You just can't. And so that's the interesting aspect of this era, is there's a little bit of a line, because like in Game of Thrones, anybody could die at any moment, and like there's like you kill them and it's over. But it's like now in this era, it's like you can't fuck with the Targaryens. You fuck with the Targaryens and you're dead. And it's and I think that like the Hightower, her wearing green, is like definitely gonna, what does that mean for the future? Like, the Hightowers aren't in Game of Thrones. We've already seen the future. So it's sort of like, you know.
Yeah, what happens to House Hightower, because they're not a player?
What happens to House Strong? House Strong is gone from Game of Thrones. What happens to House Valyrian? All these houses that we're seeing currently, like, they're not around anymore.
Everybody's going to lose the war that's coming. Everybody's going to lose.
So it's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
I can't wait to see more. Do you know if they're going to make more seasons of this? Or
it's already been renewed for season two. The scuttlebutt that I'm hearing is that once they tell this story, the Dance with Dragons story, they're going to continue. It's going to be anthologized. Like, every story that could potentially be told is up for grabs. Like, they could tell one or two seasons about Aegon's conquest. They could tell one or two seasons about Nymeria and her thousand ships of the Rhoynar. They could tell stories of the Blackfyre rebellions. They could tell stories about the Age of Heroes, you know, all the founding of the noble houses thousands of years ago. Like, they could tell all these stories because they all exist, right?
My one criticism of the show that Game of Thrones did really well is I feel like it showed, because like we're seeing a lot that's happening at the top of the kingdom. We're not seeing a lot that's happening at the bottom. I wish there was a side storyline that was just like a regular knight who's living a normal life that was like seeing all this shit happen. I wish there was more of that, I guess. It's like the regular man who is having to deal with, because we saw a little bit of that through the different storylines of Game of Thrones. It's like Arya went off on her adventures and Bran was like basically a peasant traveling to the wall for a while, and we saw Jon was in the Night's Watch, you know. It's sort of like it's
this is definitely a series about the highest
yes
levels of power.
Yes, this is just about the king, you know, just about the
it's just about the people, just to be about right the people surrounding the king. So I mean, yeah, I just, it's every single, I mean, we talk, it's destination television. That's been a theme throughout our entire podcast, is, you know, finding those series that are destination television for us. I look forward to 6 o'clock on Sundays so much now.
Yeah,
like
it's exciting.
I look forward to it all day on Sundays. It's great.
Do you guys have anything else to say about this? Wrap it up. Nope.
We'll see you for the next episode after a 10-year time jump.
Yep, 10-year time jump. You should email Andrew about trivia, King of the North 52, for some Game of Thrones trivia for the end of this series, so that we have trivia questions for us. Email the podcast, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek@twitter.com. Brothers Geek Do Stuff on Instagram. Brothers Geek Schmaltz on YouTube. Watch us on YouTube. See our crazy hand gestures and our goofy faces on YouTube.
Goofy face, especially.
I have the most goofy face.
The best beard, though.
Thank you. Wow. I would like to say for 2 seconds, I am watching Rings of Power. I feel like we're gonna have to talk about this at the end because I have a lot of questions for Christopher, our resident Tolkien.
Rings of Power.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris, we'll get into
it. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about for Rings of Power, so I feel like at the end of this, I'll just say briefly that I'm enjoying it, but it's a very different show than what we're talking about right here.
I can anticipate us doing like a 2.5-hour giant bomb-esque episode just talking about the season for the Rings of Power. Like, right? I mean, there's so much to unpack for that series. That
there's so much lore in like this. I mean, talk about Game of Thrones lore.
Let's not get into it, dude.
Well, just for a second, it's sort of like there's so much Game of Thrones lore, and there's so much like Tolkien lore. I mean, so much Tolkien lore that is like crazy. They are touching on things that I'm like, what is this? Is this guy in that book? What the fuck is going on? What? Why?
We'll establish Chris's bona fides. Chris, you've read the Silmarillion at least once, correct?
I've read the Silmarillion 3 times.
Oh, there it is. The hardest book ever to read. The most boring book ever, 3 times. Yep. And you know, so like Christopher is definitely the like Tolkien game, Lord of the Rings, like, and Andrew is the Game of Thrones, Fire and Blood, you know, Fire, yeah. Song of Ice and Fire. So I'm just the fool who likes the host. So we'll talk about it at the end of that. But I just wanted to comment for a second.
Get yourselves ready. There'll be like a
get yourselves ready.
Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power episode coming to you.
It'll be super fun.
Yeah,
yeah, it will.
Super fun. Okay, well, thanks for listening, guys, and keep watching that hot D.
Fire and Blood.